Good morning. 10:30 having arrived, I want to call to order this meeting of the Preventing Homelessness Division. We're meeting remotely pursuant to House Rule 10.01. Our first order of business is to determine who's present. So the Committee Legislative Assistant, Robin, will take the roll.
Chair Gomez.
Gomez present.
Vice Chair Keeler.
Keeler present.
Keeler present. Lee New Brindley.
Present.
Lee New Brindley present. Davids.
Davids present.
Davids present. Heinrich.
Heinrich present.
Heinrich present. Hollins.
Hollins present.
Hollins present. Hornstein.
Hornstein present.
Hornstein present. Howard.
Howard present.
Howard present. Cagle.
Cagle present.
Cagle present. Petersburg.
Petersburg present.
Petersburg present. And Ryer.
Ryer present.
We have a quorum.
Great. Thank you. Next, we're going to approve the minutes for March 2nd, 2022. Vice Chair Keeler, did you have a chance to review the minutes? Would you like to move them?
I did, Madam Chair. I'll move those minutes.
Excellent. Vice Chair Keeler moves approval of the minutes for March 2nd, 2022. Is there any discussion on the motion? Hearing none, if we could unmute for a second, and all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? The motion prevails and the minutes for March 2nd, 2022 are adopted. First on the agenda today, we have House File 3950 from Chair Moran. This is the first of three bills we're going to hear today. This bill was referred to the division from the Human Services Committee. We'll have about 30 minutes. We're going to try to do a vote on this bill at 11. And I'm going to move that House File 3950 be re-referred to Human Services, Finance, and Policy. So the bill being before us, welcome to the committee, Chair Moran. Please tell us about your bill. This is our first time having the Ways and Means Chair in our committee, and we're thrilled you're here.
Well, good morning, Madam Chair. It's so good to be in your committee and seeing you lead. It's awesome. So good morning, Madam Chair and members. Again, I want to thank you for the opportunity to present today on House File 3950. This bill is a request from the Heading Home Ramsey Continuum of Care, which is a federally mandated organization designed to address the unsheltered issues here in the city of St. Paul and Ramsey County. As you all know, homelessness is at a crisis level in Minnesota. This bill supports the groundbreaking work that Ramsey County, the city of St. Paul, and its community partners are doing together to create a society where homelessness is rare, brief, and non-reoccurring, and where racial disparities are eliminated and everyone is housed. This bill demonstrates that when we fund shelter capital and emergency services, both broadly and specifically, we can prevent and end homelessness by delivering effective people-centered integrated responses that are racially equitable and driven by community voice, advocacy, and learning. Members and Madam Chair, I have two testifiers with me today to tell you more about Heading Home Ramsey and their work over the last 2 years when COVID hit. They come to the state for partnership because CARES dollars and local property tax levy have run short. You will hear more about that from them. But quickly, my bill will fund the continuum of care for 4S for the next 5 years, starting in this fiscal year with money, hopefully, before May 1st. We're asking, the four programs are 100-bed shelters with integrated support services for adults, single occupancy, 100-bed shelter with integrated support services for families, which we desperately need, continued operation of day service shelters, and a pilot project serving frequent users of emergency services with intense 24/7 staffing. This four-pronged approach costs $14.5 million annually for 5 years. We have a handout in your package that goes into more detail about the continuum of care process, its leadership, the mission, the goals, and the financial breakdown of the requested funds. As I conclude, Madam Chair, it's important to observe in many ways that shelters have become the repository for all of the state failed systems, from housing to healthcare to education on. If we want to change shelter and homelessness outcomes, we need to rebuild a system that funds services as well as beds. Heading Home Ramsey has been working on that. Madam Chair and members, I'd like to turn it over to my testifiers, Ramsey County Commissioner Jim McDonough and Deputy Mayor Jamie Tincher, for more details about their leadership and the work on continuum of care.
Thank you so much, Chair Moran, for the introduction. And we were lucky enough to have Commissioner McDonough and Deputy Mayor Tincher in front of our committee last year, I believe, to talk about some of the innovation that they've been able to do during this time when they had, the sort of twin reality of, a crisis of unsheltered homelessness, but also some resources to address it. And so I'm really excited to have them back to talk about their work. And so welcome back to the committee. I think we're going to go to Commissioner McDonough first. If you could introduce yourself for the record and then go ahead with your testimony.
Thank you, Chair Gomez and committee members. Jim McDonough, I'm a Ramsey County Commissioner. I represent the east side of St. Paul and co-chair our continuum of care Heading Home Ramsey with Deputy Mayor Jamie Tincher. Thank you for recognizing that we were before your committee last year, because that's where I wanted to start. When we came before you last year, it was informational, and we shared with you kind of the journey we've been on here. And at that time, we were really pleased to share with you, we had just pulled together our very first, because if you recall, we really kind of refurbished, reconstituted our continuum of care in Heading Home Ramsey. And we had just done our first full meeting with over 100 members in the community, providers, and most importantly, the work we've been doing to bring people with lived experiences into the continuum of care to help make sure their voices are at the table. And that's going to be a part of the story. Chair Moran did a really nice job of laying out our bill. I'm going to take us through this a little bit more, a little bit deeper, and talk about the story a little bit more. And then Deputy Mayor Tincher will wrap up here with the work that St. Paul's been doing in partnership. We can't do this alone, and that's why we're here before you, right? It's a local partnership between cities and counties in our community, but it's also a state partnership here between us and the locals. So I do believe, Christian's got the PowerPoint up, so I'm going to walk through. But, this first slide, I want to make sure we put that in there, because this, even though Ramsey County is doing the ask, this is really driven by the work of our Heading Home Ramsey and our continuum of care. This has come through the work that we've done in the community. So, Christian, if you could advance to the next slide, please. And I wanted to give you a little bit of context. I know, because you're on this committee, most of this information is not new here. But I wanted to just walk us through this really quickly. Our unsheltered homeless has increased by 130%. Over the last 5 years. The point in time count in 2021 had the highest number of sheltered and unsheltered folks in the past 5 years. So, I see you shaking your head, Chair Gomez. We know this, but the data, and it's important to have the data to back it up, has really demonstrated that we've had this growing issue of homelessness in our community that was compounded and exacerbated by our COVID response, because at the same time the population was growing, we had to make sure our shelters were safe. Catholic Charities went from 267 folks down to about 120 to ensure social distance and all that. that pushed people out into the community. So that was a big part of our CARES response. I'll talk later. The gap, Deputy Mayor Tincher talks about this a lot, the 15,000 housing units at or below 30% AMI. You know, there's many bottlenecks along the continuum that we bump up against that, you know, are some of those barriers in rare, brief, and non-reoccurring, and addressing the racial equities and the key pieces of the mission of our Heading Home Ramsey. But that gap in housing, that's kind of the spot where we want to get everybody in stable housing that meets their needs. And that gap is just huge here, not only in Ramsey County, but in the state. And I know you've got bills that are coming through to help address that. I did want to share with the committee that, you know, between St. Paul and Ramsey, we're investing over $74 million of our ARPA funds in all deeply affordable housing at 30% AMI. We're working together on that. We've got our first solicitation going out next week. But then also Ramsey County implemented our first HRA levy ever. That brings in another $11 million a year, and most of all of that will be dedicated to deeply affordable housing. So between St. Paul and Ramsey County in the next 5 years, locally, we're doing $100 million in the deeply affordable housing at that end of the continuum to help bring that stability and get people out of shelter, off the street, and into stable housing. We'll be looking to leverage, you know, state funds as they become available, and hopefully some federal funds. But I wanted to just talk a little bit about the demand. And then again, the disparities, I can't overemphasize this. One of the things the continuum did as a part of our work, the board really wanted the data to back up, you know, whether it's anecdotal. We all can walk into Freedom House. We can all walk into Catholic Charities. We can see the disparities right in front of us. But we do have a dashboard. We do collect data. And you see some of the data in front of us, you know, Native Americans, 14.5 times more likely than white folks to experience homelessness. African Americans, 8 times more likely. Latinx, twice as likely as compared to whites. That is just unacceptable to us here in Ramsey County. And that's a big part of the work that we do with community and helping draft our response to that. Christian, if you could move to the next slide, please. I think you're all aware there's 10 continuum of cares in Minnesota, a HUD requirement to receive HUD funds. Ramsey, Hennepin, and St. Louis are the only three that are one single county. All the rest are county, multi-county jurisdictional continuum of cares. Christian, next slide, please. There's our vision and mission, and I just want to repeat it. We can't repeat it enough. Homelessness is rare, brief, non-reoccurring, and where we eliminate racial disparities. And everything we do in our continuum of care is run through that lens. It has to tie back to rare, brief, non-reoccurring, or eliminating disparities. We also know, and it drives us all the time, crises, right? COVID was a crisis that compounded the work. So we're continuing to respond to what's in front of us today, but we're trying to get ahead of that. And that's part of the legislation that we've got before you here today and the work that we're doing with St. Paul on our investment in affordable housing. Next slide, Christian. So our emergency operations, you know, we needed to depopulate the shelters as I talked about early on. We also needed to respond to the greatest risk. This growing homeless population, both sheltered and unsheltered, we're seeing more elderly, more medically fragile folks. One of the things that Catholic Charities did was partner with Regents Hospital before COVID. There's 14 respite beds at Catholic Charities to help with the folks that are medically fragile, get them out of a Regents Hospital bed that's extremely expensive, the wrong bed, but get them into a respite bed that can manage and help support them. Support our cities. Encampments are an issue and reducing the number of folks living on the street. And Jamie's really going to talk about those efforts that St. Paul has led, and they've just done an amazing job. And I'm really proud of that partnership between us and St. Paul. We have a strong partnership with our suburban cities. Maplewood, all of our communities in Ramsey County have some impact of unsheltered. But St. Paul really is the focus here on that partnership. And then we did, and you'll hear a little bit more, providing day spaces to help support people in the community, because that traditional model of shelters, Catholic Charities, Safe Space, you know, they leave at 7 o'clock in the morning, they line up back at 6 o'clock at night. You know, during the day, they're in our community. COVID really exacerbated that because they tended to go to libraries, coffee shops, public gathering spaces to stay warm or connect in community, and they lost those spaces during COVID. So St. Paul, working with the community, we did stand up another day service program. We had a listing house, and we did, moved into Freedom House. Christian, next slide, please. So at the peak, we had 509 folks in Ramsey County operated shelters. A lot of what we brought on and stood up were hotel operations, working with our hotels in our community. We've been able to drop that number to 293. A lot of that is with community partners. Catholic Charities has been able to start bringing up their numbers as COVID numbers have lessened in our community, working with other folks in our community, working to get folks into transitional housing, all those types of things. Currently brought that number down to 293. We still have 30 beds for isolation and quarantine if folks are ill. We did stand up Mary Hall again, and that's kind of a starting spot for folks to get them into the right spot, but it's also one of those spots where we can help folks if they need some isolation or quarantine. The family shelter that we've added, and I really want to talk about that later on and share with that. Then I mentioned our daily operations. We stood up Freedom House. Our monthly operating costs have been has been $3 million a month. And we funded that mostly with CARES money, but we have put local levy into this. We've got about $35 million for Ramsey County money. St. Paul has invested their own money in some of the items that Jamie will talk about. Next slide, Christian. Thank you. This is a slide that I really felt important, and this is why this partnership is so important. In Ramsey County, 58% of the folks we serve, and we serve everybody. We don't ask them where they come from other than to get data to help us make decisions. We serve every single person that's in our community. But 58% come from outside Ramsey County. And that's why this area needs that strong support of state and regional partnerships. I see Commissioner Connolly on the call. You know, that partnership between Hennepin and Minneapolis and St. Paul is strong, and we continue to strengthen that. So that slide is just an important slide to help demonstrate why we need your support on this legislation that Chair Moran is carrying for us, House File 3950. Next slide, Christian. All right, the charge to the CLC, and I want to start off, you know, and I talked last time we were before you last year about our goals here to really have our CLC own everything homeless. That, you know, I talked about partnerships. Ramsey County cannot solve this alone in our community. The city of St. Paul can't solve that. We need the providers. We need leaders from other organizations to be at the table. And when we pulled our CLC together, we have those decision makers at the table. But we presented to the CLC this cliff that's coming that was referenced here as our CARES funding starts to run out in May, but the cliff really starts in March, because without a funding source, we will lose money quickly, or we'll have to start giving staff notice. So next slide, Christian. This is our 100 bed room, a low barrier pilot program, emergency shelter, continued operations of our day shelter, and then the family service thing. I want to talk real quickly. Two best practices that have come out of here, the 24-hour 100 beds at Bethesda, and then the 24-hour beds for our families. We don't want to lose that, and that's a part of this request moving forward. So I've got a cost breakdown for you, Chair Gomez, for your committee members to take a look at. That's a part of the slides. I'm not going to talk about that one right now, but you have that data for you to see that breakdown. And I did want to turn it over to Deputy Mayor Titcher so she could talk about a couple of the other priorities and the work that St. Paul's been doing with us. Thank you, Chair Goldness.
Thank you so much, Commissioner. Just as a time check, we're trying to have a vote on this in about 10 minutes. So I'm going to turn it over to Deputy Mayor Tincher. Welcome back to our committee. We're thrilled to have you. And, you know, I just wanted to say, I think that, you know, with Commissioner McDonough and Commissioner Conley on the call, and, you know, we've had really incredible partnership from our counties and from our cities. And what you guys have done has been really incredible. And, I really think that what's emerging from the COVID work is like information that needs to inform what we're doing more broadly, because we learned a lot, I think, during this time about how to meet people where they are. And so I'm just want to extend our gratitude for the partnership that you all have shown and the way that you've stepped up. We know it's been really difficult for your staff and really extraordinary for us. I think we've averted a disaster in this area. So thank you. And welcome to the committee, Deputy Mayor. Please introduce yourself and go ahead.
Thank you, Chair Gomez. Jamie Tincher, I'm the Deputy Mayor in the City of St. Paul. I'm really glad to be here, and thank you to all of you for serving on this committee and the work that you do to help those in our state who are vulnerable, and it's just greatly appreciated by local folks. I'm going to specifically speak to this package of investments, the four things that came from our community, community partners through our COC, really demonstrates for me the culmination of a lot of the learning that we had during COVID. And what we figured out is that the ability to diversify our services was critical to being able to successfully help the folks that we needed to help. So having the single adult shelter with wraparound services that were single occupancy rooms, a lot of the changes that we made, those were really critical in order for us to actually be successful. Having family shelter space for those needs. Two of the requests are critically important from a city standpoint. The day shelter spaces. So we have emergency overnight shelter, which is available for individuals in the night hours. And having that day shelter space for individuals who are experiencing homelessness or are at risk of becoming homeless, having a place where they can go get a cup of coffee, make connections, where we can support individuals. It helps them move into that continuum. Familiar Faces, I'm going to speak a little bit more about that. It's a program that a collaborative of nonprofit service partners, healthcare representatives, first responders, county and city government developed as a demonstration project to serve East Metro adults who are homeless and have frequent interactions with Metro Transit Police, St. Paul Police, St. Paul Fire Department, and hospital emergency departments. These individuals, the majority of whom are experiencing homelessness and significant mental health and substance use issues, have repeated interactions with law enforcement, emergency rooms, crisis services, and shelter. And without assertive and persistent engagement, they're likely to continue to cycle through crisis after crisis. And this Familiar Faces pilot project that we would hope to launch is modeled after FUSE, which is Frequent User System Engagement Programs that have proven to be effective throughout the United States. And for a little context on who we believe would be engaging with this programming, in 2019, Ramsey County judges in criminal court made 251 findings of incompetency. 46% or 116 of those involved only 25 individuals. I'll say that again. They made 251 findings of incompetency, and 116 of those were only 25 individuals. So the data sheets on those individuals show repeated charges of things like trespass and theft, sometimes assault, but specifically they were more often things like failure to pay bus or light rail ticket, and stole a cell phone. So with Familiar Faces, our goal would be to stop this cycle by providing supportive housing and other services to provide stability and improve these individuals' lives. And then the other thing that I just wanted to touch on was, you know, our strategy in partnership with the county. What we've talked about a lot is with the COVID relief funds, we were really intentional about investing those to address what we were seeing, you know, the significant increase in encampments and individuals who were forced to survive outdoors. So we invested that first wave of COVID relief dollars in that shelter space. So I think about it as at a really high level, you have individuals who are surviving outdoors. The middle spot is how can we get them indoors and provide some services, get that stability. So move from basic survival mode into some shelter and get stable. But the long-term goal is we want folks to not get stuck in that space. We want them to move to permanent, long-term, you know, health and a life that they want to be in. And so the second phase of those COVID relief dollars, we've partnered and we want to make sure that we're investing in that third phase, which is deeply affordable, 30% AMI and below, so that we can move our residents through that cycle. And so this ask is really to help us not lose ground in the work that we've made, because if we lose those folks and they go back to survival mode, at the time we make those investments and we move that third piece, we're going to have to come back through that cycle with a lot of folks. So that really is, you know, our goal with coming and asking for the partnership with the state. And then the last thing, I know that we want to be quick, so I'll go through this really quickly. Christian, if you go to the last piece, in partnership with the county, what we've done in St. Paul is we've also really been intentional about individualizing our approach to engagement and crisis response. And so this chart just shows the work that we've done to bring four separate teams together. We call it our optimal response efforts. These first two teams, the Coast Unit and our new CARES Unit in our police and fire department, is the co-response model where we are sending social workers and housing supports to 911 low acuity and non-medical calls. So we get a lot of calls that, you know, it's a 911 call, but what we really need is a community support and some other things. And so that's our embedded co-response team for both law enforcement and medical calls. We've added a dedicated team called our HEART team in our Department of Safety and Inspections. And those are the folks that we have a coordinator and a housing counselor. Every time that we get any report or if we see individuals who are surviving outdoors, the city is sending our housing navigators and supports, and our goal is to build rapport, know who those folks are, inform our by name registry so that we are doing everything we can to get those folks connected to services and supports that they want and that they need. And then our Office of Neighborhood Safety works in this space, and that's our community-based youth interventions, group and gun violence work. And so all four of those teams are coming together to provide optimal responses and really connect people with all the services that we just talked about with Ramsey County and others. Thank you so much.
Great. Thank you so much, Deputy Mayor Tincture. Thanks for being here. We're going to go to member questions. I see that Representative Petersburg has his hand up. Please go ahead, Rep.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and it sounds like either Commissioner or Ms. Tincture that you really have a good handle on a lot of input and information in regards to the people that you're servicing. And this is a question I ask every once in a while that you may or may not know. Do you have any trends or general similarities into the causes of them originally getting into homelessness? The reason why I ask that is because if we could figure that out, we could help getting into that homelessness situation right away. It would be less stressful for the client and probably less stressful onto the system that we have as well. So is there any general thoughts or information that you receive as you have brought these, the inputting of the data for these individuals?
Deputy Mayor Tincture.
Sure. What I would say is what I've learned, my personal experience in this space, is that we've figured out that homelessness happens to everybody for so very many reasons. What COVID has helped me understand is that all of us are one health emergency, one layoff, one, you know, crisis away from being in the circumstance of a lot of the people that I talk to in encampments and who are surviving on the streets or in their cars. And I think what we have decided is our answer is that diversification of services and individualizing our response so that when we, if there are 30 individuals in a room who are experiencing homelessness, I can pretty much guarantee you, you're going to hear 30 different stories about what's going on and what would help them move to stability and success. So I agree with you. If there was one answer, that would make it super easy. And my experience has just been that our answer is that there's just so very many answers. We've got to be nimble and ready to help support people.
Representative Petersburg?
Thank you for that. And if you could share some ideas that you have and what you've done to help people from becoming homelessness too, that'd be helpful. Maybe that's a later date, but thank you for your answers.
Thank you, Rep. Petersburg. And I do know that on the slides, they did talk about, and I think actually Commissioner McDonough said that, you know, Deputy Tincture really talks a lot about this, that the building gap, that we're down 14,000, I think, units for those at 30% AMI. And so I just wonder, you know, I know there are a lot of contributing factors, as the deputy mayor said, but, you know, the reality of the tightness in the housing market is really causing a lot of folks who are on the margins to get knocked off, I think. Representative New Brindley had some questions.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And first of all, I want to thank Commissioner McDonough and Deputy Mayor Tincture. I remember very vividly your presentation from last year as well. And I remember being very impressed with the fact that you seemed to have a much better handle on this issue than just about anyone else we've heard from. So I come into this looking very favorably at this, knowing the work that you've done. I do have a couple of questions. On your slide that sort of broke down what you stood up during COVID, you said we're currently still up 293 single and adult beds. Are you going to be losing 193 of those, or are they just funded through other avenues? They're not included in this request.
I'm not sure if, which of our testifiers would want to take that one.
I could start, and I do have Keith Latimore from our Housing Stability Office here if I get this wrong. But, you know, a lot of the folks, a lot of the numbers we stood up were the hotel program. But we stood up Bethesda, which was 100 beds. We stood up Luther Hall. We stood up Provincial House for families. And we stood up Mary Hall. I talked about kind of as an entry point. We've walked some of that back. Catholic Charities is increasing their numbers. But the cliff here that's coming in the CARES-funded beds includes the 100 beds at Bethesda, includes the 100 beds at Provincial House. And then the rest of them are coming from either hotel programs that we still have going that will lose out. So that number are totally, and Keith, correct me if I'm wrong, is the CARE funded beds. You know, we still have Catholic Charity beds. We still have safe space beds. We still have Union Gospel beds. But they're full. I mean, or getting close to being full.
Representative New Brindley.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Commissioner. My next question is on the cost breakdowns. I'm wondering, and maybe there are just some costs not included or there's overlap. The request for the 100-bed single adult shelter is significantly more than the request for the 100-bed family shelter. We're looking at $9 million for the same number of beds as $2 million at the family shelter. Can you talk a little bit about what the difference there and why the discrepancy?
So I'll take a stab at it, and Keith, I invite you to jump in. So on the 100-bed single adult, typically it's been a crisis response, Catholic Charities response. We have Higher Ground and the Opportunity Center that they've really tried to step up in some wraparound services. We actually have some folks from Ramsey County at Higher Ground to help support folks. But traditionally, we have not had those wraparound services attached to the shelter program like we did with Bethesda in a way that we've never done before in bringing people there. So that number is higher. With the family number, We've had traditionally more services, and the families have had more support already built in as they're kind of moving through the homelessness. When they were in the church program pre-COVID, we had family place where families would go, kids would go to school, non-school age kids would stay with mom there and start getting services right there. So I think at a high level, we've been able to invest in families. They're a highest priority, of course. Kids are the most vulnerable on the street in the way that we haven't been able to. In the Bethesda model, when we stood that up, we wanted to move past what we've done in the past. We wanted to do better than that. And we used that as an opportunity to really bring in those wraparound services to really help with the non-reoccurring and keeping folks brief here in their homeless cycle. Keith, did I miss something there? Is there something that the representative should know about that I didn't touch base on?
Mr. Lattimore? No, Commissioner.
I'm sorry. We sort of spoke at the same time. Are you good, Mr. Lattimore? All right. Thank you, Representative New Brindley. Sorry about
that. Thank you, Madam Chair. And thank you, Commissioner. I appreciate that. My comments now are directed not so much to the author bill, but to the committee and to the chair. From what we have heard from what you are doing in Ramsey County, it seems to be effective and it seems to be working. I have some significant frustration with the fact that this is another $60 million ask. That is not my frustration with the bill author or the county, but the only thing we have seen in this committee is multiple bills in every hearing for multi-million dollar ask, you know, millions and millions and millions of dollars asking for different things. And in this committee, we are not doing a good job of prioritizing and of figuring out where this money would be best spent. This is the kind of program that I think is worth amplifying. I think this is the kind of program you have shown through the data. I remember very distinctly, Ms. Tincture, you telling us that with your homeless population, you didn't just have data and numbers, you knew them by name. You knew the names of every unhoused homeless person within your jurisdiction. That tells me that you're doing something right. And so I would hope, I'm very frustrated with the dollar amounts that are being thrown around. And I would like to see that tightened up. But this is the kind of program that I think we need to figure out how to support and amplify, not only here, but elsewhere. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative New Brindley. Members, is there any further discussion on House File 3950? Seeing none, Chair Moran, did you have any closing comments for us before we take the vote?
Madam Chair, and members, I'll be really short. As I heard from Representative New Brindley, and you know, it's a great program. It is a holistic, very comprehensive, necessary programming. And so I just hope that we can get the support of your committee today and move this bill forward. Thank you for your time.
Thank you so much for being with us today, Chair Moran, and thank you to the testifiers. Hearing no further discussion, I'm going to renew my motion that House File 3950 be re-referred to Human Services, Finance, and Policy. If Ms. Schmidt could take the roll.
Chair Gomez?
Gomez, aye.
Gomez, aye. Vice Chair Keeler?
Keeler, aye.
Vice Chair Keeler, aye. Lead New Brindley?
No.
Lead New Brindley, nay. Davids?
Davids, no.
Davids, nay. Heinrich?
Heinrich, no.
Heinrich, nay. Hollins?
Aye.
Hollins, aye. Hornstein?
Hornstein, aye.
Hornstein, aye. Howard.
Aye.
Howard, aye. Cagle.
Aye.
Cagle, aye. Petersburg.
Petersburg, no.
Petersburg, no. Ryer.
Ryer, aye.
Ryer, aye. We have 7 ayes and 4 nays.
There being seven ayes and four nays, the motion passes, and Chair Moran, House File 3950 is on its way back to Human Services, Finance, and Policy. Thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you.
Next on the agenda is House File 3377 from Vice Chair Keeler. This bill was referred to the Division from Human Services, Finance, and Policy. We have 30 minutes. Well, we have 20 minutes basically now scheduled for this bill. We're going to try to be a little bit quicker with this one, and I'm going to move that House File 3377 be re-referred to Human Services, Finance, and Policy. We'd like to take a vote on this at 11:55 if possible. So we have House File 3377 before us. Vice Chair Keeler, you have an author's amendment.
I do, Madam Chair. The author's amendment is to change some technical language. This is actually not a grant program. It's a pilot program across the state. So the amendment is just getting it in the technical language.
Great. Oh, sorry. I will move the A1 amendment to put the bill in the form that the author wants. Any discussion on the A1? Representative New Brindley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And thank you, Representative Keeler. I'm trying to work my way through the amendment. I'm just wondering, is there a reason you didn't do a DE amendment? This amendment is incredibly cumbersome and changes almost the entire bill. Like, this is a really frustrating way to do this. In fact, I held up one page. These are all the changes throughout the bill.
Vice Chair Keeler.
Thank you for the question, Representative New Brindley. I would agree. Lesson learned on my end that a DE amendment would have probably been much clearer. I can take that to note for the next committee if you feel like that would be easier for us to walk through as we move this forward. Thank you for the feedback.
Representative New Brindley.
Yeah, I would just comment, and you know, obviously you get to make the bill what you want, and so I will support the amendment. However, because of the cumbersomeness of the bill, it's virtually unreadable. I'm going to be a no on the bill today in the end. I can just tell you that right now because it's virtually unworkable. So thank you, Madam Chair.
All right, thank you. Is there any further discussion on the A1 amendment? I'm not seeing any. So if we could unmute for a moment, and all those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? The motion prevails and the amendment is adopted. Vice Chair Keeler, your bill is in front of the committee in the form you'd like. Please explain your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. The conversations that we've been having are really about how we prevent homelessness. I want to tell a quick story about something that happened in my life. My niece had 3 rounds of osteosarcoma. I'm not sure if any of you know what that is, but she had major surgeries, even to the point that she had an arm fully amputated. During this time, she didn't have a safe place to live. She didn't have a place that she was close to medical care. So as her auntie, I allowed her to come and stay with me for months. While we did this, had she not had that opportunity with me as a family member, I'm unsure where she would have stayed that would have been healthy and safe for her. So this bill is similar to that situation that I'm sure many of us have been in. What we know is 1 in 10 young adults who are aged 18 through 25 experience a bout of homelessness. Half of them do not utilize the shelters and such that we're talking about or have been talking about. What they do is they find those kinship relationships, those chosen families, those relatives that have been really close in their life and providing a safety network for them, that's where they end up staying a lot of the time. This is how community steps up and helps community members. This is how kinship and family steps up and supports in these areas. What this bill does, and Rep. New Brindley, I'll do my best to walk through the bill. I agree that the adjustments made it complicated, so I'll do my best here. This is a pilot program that's funding up to 5 providers that will be able to help with services or dollar amounts that would just offset some of that cost when you have an extra relative or someone that you love living in your home with you. It's an agreement that takes place between the chosen family and the individual that is staying with them, whether it's increased costs to help with food, whether it's increased costs to help with other living expenses in that space. What I really like about this is that we've heard over and over that our communities step up, our partners, our neighbors, our support systems step up in some of these places to help keep our young adults off of the streets. And so that's what the effort of this bill is doing. It is an investment that will hopefully prevent homelessness without putting more money into more shelters that we're already utilizing, those networks of love, support, and care that we have for our young adults. With that, Madam Chair, I know we have some testifiers who can speak a little bit more on what these programs actually look like, and I'll yield the rest of my time to them.
Thank you very much, Vice Chair Keeler. First up for testifiers, we have Jacqueline White. Ms. White, welcome to the committee. If you could introduce yourself and go ahead with your testimony.
Hi, yes, I am Jacqueline White. I am the founder and executive director of Close Knit. We are loving youth out of homelessness. Chair Gomez, Vice Chair Keeler, and committee members, I am thrilled to be here to, and that you are considering House File 3377, a pilot program to support chosen family hosting arrangements to prevent youth homelessness. I have watched all the hearings, and I just want to say I've really been impressed by how thoughtfully everyone is thinking about this really tough issue that Minnesota is facing. How do we prevent homelessness? More than 20 years ago, I hosted a young woman who was facing homelessness, and I later adopted her. So one of the things that I learned from that experience is that simply having a roof over your head is not enough. People, we thrive in loving connection with others, and that is what we need to be thinking about as well with young people. So our bill is specifically addressing young adults, 18 to 24. And I wanna ask the committee to think about that age range. And I'm guessing that there are some committee members who have an adult child of that age who is living with them. What is the norm for somebody 18 to 24? It turns out that 61% are living with their parents. That is the norm today. 61%. Why is that? That's a high number. Well, part of it is COVID, but a lot of it is economics. Now we have this inflation going on. The dollars are tight, right? And what do you do when things are tight for you, right? You go to family. Those are the people who will be there for you no matter what, right? But what if you're a young person who doesn't have family? What if you're aging out of foster care? What if, like a third of youth facing homelessness, you've lost your parent or guardian to death? You don't have a family member to go to. Where do you go? Again, I'm gonna ask committee members to just think, where would you have gone if you were in that position and you couldn't go to your family and you needed a place to stay? Well, we've asked young people where they go, and we've done the research, and it's in your packet. You can look at that. And what the young people tell us is that if they can't go to family, they create family. They find chosen family. They find people who can play that role for them. It might be a friend's family. It might be a neighbor. It might be someone from their faith community. It might be an extended relative. But that need for caring, connection, and family is really strong. But let's think about that. So if you're a young person in that situation, you can't go home, you want to go to a chosen family, what are those families dealing with? Well, we know families are struggling. The dollar is tight, right? If we look at what percentage people are paying toward housing, more than 43% of renters are cost burdened in Minnesota. They're paying more than 30% toward rent, And it's also true for homeowners, 18%. So think about a family, think about a youth, a young person showing up at a chosen family, and they can't necessarily provide that stability that they would need, right? So what if we invest in those arrangements, right? And that's what Close-Knit is proposing through this legislation. And that we have tried at Hope for Youth in Anoka. Let's give those families some financial help. Let's do some case coaching. Let's create an agreement about shared expectations. How does that go? And guess what? It's working. So what we are proposing is an opportunity to do this statewide. When we talk about preventing homelessness in adults, we really need to think about this young adult cohort, 18 to 24, because if they can launch successfully, they will avoid homelessness. One in four adults who are homeless first became homeless between 18 and 24 in Minnesota. So we see investment in chosen family hosting as a form of naturally occurring affordable housing. And we encourage you to make this investment. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ms. White. Next, we have Larry McKenzie. Mr. McKenzie, if you could introduce yourself for the record and go ahead with your testimony. A couple minutes would be great.
Yes, good morning, Madam Chair and committee. My name is Larry McKenzie, McKenzie. I am the current boys basketball coach at Minneapolis North High School, and I was fortunate enough to meet Mrs. White and Close-Knit and have a conversation. And I've been asked to come here today because during the course of my 25 years as a high school basketball coach, fortunately or unfortunately, I've had to move five of my players into my home. And so I am here today to support this bill. I was blessed enough to be in a financial position that I did not need support. But as she's already said, there are a number of people out there who are having to, almost being forced to take in relatives or kids that need a place. And oftentimes when you make those decisions, I mean, it's not a lot of time to process, right? It is the right thing to do. And so I want to support this bill with hope that resources would be given to those who can afford to, but want to provide housing and take care of those young people who don't have any other options but to be sleeping in cars or on the street. So thank you.
Thank you so much for being with us today, Coach McKenzie. And I don't know if everybody knows about Coach McKenzie's background, but he just is has done incredible service to the young people of Minneapolis and especially of North Minneapolis. He talked about kind of the way that he personally has stepped up, but you know, also just has led our teams to incredible victory and been, you know, a real example of like how to do this work with young people with just integrity and service. And so we thank you really profoundly for all that you've done for young people in our city. Thank you. Next up is Jack and Paul and Robert, I believe. If you guys could introduce yourselves for the record and go ahead with your testimony.
I don't even know. I'm sorry. I'm trying to find the right angle. Okay. You can kind of see all of us here.
There we go.
Okay. I'm Jack.
I'm Roberta.
I'm Paul. This is my chosen family. They're basically my second family. They took me in when I needed a place to go. I kind of just showed up with a couple bags full of clothes and things, and they kind of just said, yeah, sure, you'll stay with us. And I never left until going to school at Augsburg now.
It's 2 years he stayed with us.
Money that we received from Brenda and Jacqueline really helped us to you know, get groceries and have gas to get around, because for a while, Roberta was the only one with the car. So we needed these resources to kind of help the family out and, you know, get to where we needed to go. It's been a great help. It was fantastic while we had it, and it really helped us get through, you know, when we needed to get through.
Yes, Brenda was great with helping us from, you know, Hope for Youth. She helped us with anything we needed help with. She was so positive about Jack being here, and that just worked out great. And then he left, and we really missed him. We all went to our rooms and kind of like, why? I loved that period of time.
Okay, thank you so much for joining us, Jack and Paul and Roberta. We appreciate your testimony. And thank you, Paul and Roberta, for stepping up for a young person in your life. We appreciate that. Members, is there any discussion on the bill or questions for our testifiers or bill author? Oh, I'm sorry, I'm like, gotta pull up my thing here. Representative New Brindley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I apologize for being a little salty about the A1 amendment. I have frustration because I'm not really sure what's in the bill, just because I can't, I couldn't update my copy of the bill fast enough to be able to do that. I will say, I think that as, you know, and frankly, as Representative Petersburg talks about all the time, in this committee, we should be focusing on preventing homelessness. And that's what this does. So I really appreciate that, Representative Keeler, that you are bringing forward a bill to prevent homelessness. And I know that in my household growing up, my parents were awesome. And we almost always had extra kids living with us for some period of time in my high school and early adult years. You know, people who I still call my brother to this day, because it was a friend of my brother's, right, who lived with us, and he is absolutely every bit my brother as anyone else is. I will be honest with you, I have concerns about institutionalizing and creating a government program out of healthy relationships and healthy concern for others. Whereas right now, these things are happening all the time. In fact, I think one of our other committee members would say that he didn't know that he was homeless until he was on this committee, but certainly he spent a time living with friends. And until we got to this committee, and he didn't even know he was homeless, because he always had that loving place to be, or supportive, and or at least a couch. And that was the circumstance. So I have concerns about creating a government program out of something that currently is done through the heart and faith. Because frankly, we have seen throughout time the government try to do things that then breaks down. It ultimately breaks down the willingness to do these things that people have been doing for forever, right? I mean, this isn't a new concept of that adopted family. This isn't a new concept, but we see things, we just see a breakdown in that when the government gets involved in it. And that's a real concern for me. Love the concept. Again, Representative Keeler, I can't thank you enough for bringing forward a bill that, really is aimed at preventing homelessness from the beginning, right? To not get there. And I assume that this bill will not be coming back before us once it's been engrossed, but I look forward to seeing the engrossed bill, but I'm a no for today. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative New Brindley. You know, I think that I want to go to Rep Keeler, but I grew up in one of those houses too. That's another thing you and I have in common, is that we always had, you know, my mom was the one who she was like a cool mom, and everybody would come over to our place. And so it was definitely common for her you know, to have extra teenage boys, especially around, as I noticed most of them were teenage boys. But, you know, my mom was a single mom. She's a school teacher. And so feeding a couple extra teenage boys was sometimes a challenge. And so I think that's what this is, you know, I hear you. You know, that's another thing that we share is like, you know, we don't want to create like big government programs for everything. But this is an effort to try to support those families who maybe like it's in their heart and they want to take in those that extra kid, but like the financial strain just presents a challenge. So Representative Keeler, did you have anything else? I don't see any other questions from committee members. So if you wanted to just if you had any comment about Representative New Brindley's question or comment, and then maybe just go ahead to closing comments, would be great.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative New Brindley, I would agree with you. There's a lot of family members that I have that are still like my aunties and cousins and uncles that I still am maybe unsure, but we just believe in kinship so much that they're all family. And my pushback a little bit on it is, you know, institutionalizing this, adding government funding is that, you know, the cost of caring shouldn't create a bigger burden on our ability to love and care for other people. The actual cost that this is taking into consideration for each family is minimal compared to the cost that we're putting into shelter programs. And so for me, I just kind of look at it as a support and a funding to help those mechanisms that are already there. I can tell you from my situation, when I've taken people in, an extra $200 to help offset the cost of food would have made major differences for me to be able to do that. I know that some of the individuals, you know, are financially feasible and can open up their homes to people without that extra burden. But there are people like myself who would love to be able to care in that way and would love to continue to do that. But just a little bit of support would help us do that and not increase the cost of these other shelter spaces. Thank you for the comments and the support and understanding that preventing homelessness is what we're really trying to do with this bill. And I'll be sure to communicate with you with other updates that we make so this bill is easier to read moving forward. With that, I'll just return to my motion and encourage us to invest in this, as this is what we've been talking about for the last year and a half in this committee. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Representative Keeler. I'm not seeing any other hands, so we can move to a vote. I'll renew my motion that House File 3377 as amended be re-referred to Human Services, Finance, and Policy. And Robin can take the roll. Chair votes aye.
Chair Gomez, aye. Vice Chair Keeler?
Aye.
Vice Chair Keeler, aye. Lead New Brindley?
No.
Lead New Brindley, nay. Davids?
Davids, no.
Davids, no. Heinrich?
Heinrich, no.
Heinrich, no. Hollins?
Hollins, aye.
Hollins, aye. Hornstein?
Hornstein, aye.
Hornstein, aye. Howard?
Howard, aye.
Howard, aye. Cagle?
Aye.
Cagle, aye. Petersburg?
Petersburg, no.
Petersburg, no. Ryer?
Ryer, aye.
Ryer, aye. 7 ayes and 4 nays.
Thank you so much. There being 7 ayes and 4 nays, the motion passes in House File 3377. As amended, is re-referred to Human Services, Finance, and Policy. Finally, for our last bill of the day, Representative Herr is here with House File 3568. This bill was referred to the division from the Human Services Committee, and I will move that House File 3568 be re-referred to Human Services, Finance, and Policy. So the bill is before us. Representative Herr has a DE author's amendment labeled DE1. I want to move the DE amendment to put the bill in the form that the author wants. Representative Herr, could you explain the amendment to us briefly?
Thank you, Chair Gomez. And I just want to say this is my first time in front of your committee. So if I were there in person, I'd bring you guys egg rolls, but I'm not. So
well, next year we're going to do it.
Got it. So the DE1 amendment, and I hear Lidna Brindley, Lotta and Claire about DEs. I'm not a fan of those, but this was actually quite necessary for this particular bill. It does change it quite a bit. But we knew that when we submitted this bill, it was very complex, and so there would be changes, and we actually narrowed the scope with this DE. So what this DE does is, what the DE does is that it retains the language limiting how much one of one's SSI benefits an individual must pay towards housing support, but it adds language to also limit how much one's veterans benefits must be paid towards a housing support client obligation, which is 30% of their benefit. And then it also limits these changes to housing support tenants in community settings, which are places where individuals hold their own lease to a unit. So this DE amendment actually narrows the scope and puts the bill in its proper form.
Wonderful. Thank you for explaining that, Representative Herr. Is there any discussion on the DE amendment? Hearing none, if we could unmute for a second, all those in favor of the motion, please signify by saying aye.
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 Any opposed? The motion prevails, the amendment's adopted. And so Representative Herr, you could go ahead and explain your bill. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Committee, and thank you for hearing House File 3568. House File 3568 is a bipartisan bill that builds on the efforts from last session to strengthen and improve our state's housing support program. I know that last year, the bill that preceded this didn't come through this committee, but Chair Gomez had a great involvement in really understanding that bill, and it was passed in the HHS omnibus bill. And so we appreciate that support, and this bill actually expands on that. So housing support is a statewide permanent supportive housing program that pairs housing assistance, including rent, utilities, food, and laundry with support services. It serves seniors and adults with disabilities who have low incomes. More than half of recipients are people of color or American Indian, and more than half receive a form of supplemental security income, or SSI. Housing support is an evidence-based program and perhaps the state's best tool to help people exit homelessness, but there is potential for it to support better outcomes and even stronger pathways to stable homes. This bill proposes a seemingly small but significant reform, allowing housing support participants to retain more of their SSI income and veterans benefit. This would achieve two things. One, it removes barriers that lead individuals to choose to stay in shelter rather than enroll in housing support. And two, it helps individuals build the skills and savings needed for greater housing and financial stability. We understand that the bill language before you may require additional amendments. It is, like I stated earlier, it is a complex issue, but the intent and community support for the proposal is really strong. It is grounded in the work and experience of emergency shelters and housing support providers, county partners, and most importantly, individuals with lived experience of homelessness. So I do have testifiers here today, and I, Chair, with your permission, will yield my time and turn over to our first testifier, Lorna Schmidt, who is a public policy manager with Catholic Charities of St. Paul and Minneapolis.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for that intro, Representative Herr. Welcome to the committee, Ms. Schmidt. If you could just introduce yourself and go ahead with your testimony.
Thank you. Hello, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Lorna Schmidt, and I'm the public policy manager with Catholic Charities of St. Paul and Minneapolis. Catholic Charities is a regional leader of housing, emergency shelter, and direct services, serving over 23,000 men, women, children, and families each year. We're excited to have this time with you today to discuss housing support and what we see as a really critical reform to improving housing and homelessness outcomes. We are especially grateful for the leadership and support that Representative Herr has shown in working with us to disentangle what we know is a rather complicated and often misunderstood program. As she said, housing support is more than rental assistance. It is a permanent supportive housing program that pairs housing assistance with support services, serving low-income seniors and adults with disabilities who are at risk of homelessness in all corners of the state. It is perhaps our best tool to help people exit homelessness, supporting nearly 4,000 moves in 2019 alone. But best does not mean it's perfect. As you'll hear from our testifiers, current housing support formulas treat earned and unearned income differently when calculating how much, if anything, an individual must pay for their housing each month. Unlike earned income from wages, an individual with unearned income, like SSI, RSDI, and veterans benefits, can be forced to pay all of their monthly benefit, except $111 as a personal allowance. This is true even though in many cases, those individuals have worked for those benefits. And for them, it means the door to a home through housing support could cost them as much as 90% of their monthly income. This bill aims to reform the way that housing support considers SSI and veterans benefits to ensure people aren't forced to pay more than 30% of their monthly income, which is the general standard for what is considered affordable housing. It would support more moves out of shelter, helping to reduce pressure on our shelter systems, and it would remove the roadblocks that force reliance on the program so that we can better support those who are working toward greater housing and financial independence. The idea for the bill came to us from our staff, our tenants, and our shelter guests, and we've been really encouraged by the feedback and support that we've gotten from our community and government partners. As Representative Herr said, we recognize that this bill language, even with today's amendment, likely isn't perfect, but we know the intent behind it is solid, and we are committed to continuing to work with partners and all of you to get it right, because we know we can't ignore it and expect better outcomes. We appreciate your questions and your comments. And with that, I'll turn it over to our other testifiers.
Thank you so much for being with our committee again, Ms. Schmidt. We also appreciate your work and you joining us. Next, Shannon Lowe is with us. If you could just introduce yourself and go ahead with your testimony, Ms. Lowe. Welcome to the committee.
Sure. Hello, Madam Chair and members of the committee. Thank you for having me here today and giving me the opportunity to speak on HS 3568. My name is Shannon Lowe, and I am a program manager with the Dorothy Day Residence at Catholic Charities in St. Paul in Minneapolis, located just down the hill from the Capitol. I am also a licensed independent clinical social worker, and I have studied homeless systems in many areas of the United States. I did my master's thesis on the single adult shelter redesign in Minneapolis that was done in 2016, as well as in Slovenia. I am also an individual who has spent 5 years homeless myself before finally entering long-term recovery in 2008. My experience during that 5-year period of time set my life on a trajectory to help improve and prevent those experiences from negatively impacting others. Dorothy Day Residence provides permanent supportive housing to 177 men and women who have experienced long-term homeless or have other health and physical barriers. Some of those 177, 12 of those are for transition age youth. We were talking about youth ages 18 to 24. And some of those, 15 of those 177 are also for veterans. Many residents are enrolled in this housing support program. I know housing support works to improve housing and homelessness outcomes because I see the impact of it every day. I've been there to witness the joy a person experiences as they move out of shelter and into their own apartment with a door that they can lock and a bed that they can call their own and a supportive community around them. That is my favorite part of the job. I have seen that the difference that stable housing has on a person's ability to tend to their mental and physical well-being. A difference that has become even more pronounced thanks to your supportive changes to absence policies last year to allow housing support tenants to enroll in extended mental health and substance use treatment programs without fear of losing their housing. This was a huge win for our folks as they no longer need to choose between health and housing. I know this program works when we can get people into it and when we can create stability. The income formulas that are currently in place, however, feel like a dependence trap rather than a hand up and are causing eligible people to turn down the support. When a person is enrolled in housing support, they receive their own apartment, very basic amenities like sheets and towels, and in some cases, additional case management help. Renters must pay a portion of their earned income to the program called a client obligation, and they are still responsible for their own daily needs like phone, transportation, clothes, and family obligation. Right now, recipients of SSI and RSDI, which is considered unearned income, who are enrolled in housing support must pay in all but $111 of their monthly benefit to the program as their client obligation. Unlike wages from a job, which can only be partly claimed, when you're working, it ends up being about 41% of your income goes towards the client obligation. SSI and RSDI recipients, really in the VA pension, really any unearned income, they end up paying what amounts to as much as 90% of their monthly income to rent. There are people right now who are unsheltered or staying in shelter who are turning down housing support for this very reason. They are declining housing assistance they are eligible for and which could provide them an exit from homelessness, because accepting it means they lose nearly all control of their already very limited finances. This is a problem, and it's even more concerning when you consider that the longer someone experiences homelessness, the harder it is for them to exit, and the more resource intensive it becomes to help them. We also have renters who struggle each month to pay their client obligation because the $111 they get for the personal allowance isn't enough for them to pay for their other basic expenses every month, things like a phone bill, transportation, which isn't always public transportation. Many folks have a vehicle, which has parking, insurance, repairs, personal hygiene supplies, support for their children or family members that aren't currently in their care, court, probation fines, emergency expenses that come up. And this is the cost of simply surviving. Our clients want to live too. They want to enjoy life the way we all do. And today, $111 or what's left after the above doesn't go very far by way of entertainment or enjoyment. Our housing support renters are leaseholders with the same rights and responsibilities of anyone else in a market rate apartment. When a client obligation isn't paid, it puts that person at risk of eviction and an unlawful detainer, which can then throw them back into homelessness and make their next try at housing that much more difficult. And then I see the individuals who want to transition off housing support, but they feel that they're trapped, held in poverty, and forced to become reliant on it. They entered the program as a first step on their path towards housing stability, but with no real opportunity to build the skills and savings to transition into something else, it ended up feeling more like another dead end for them. There's one such client who was supposed to be here today, but couldn't at the last minute. I'm going to tell his story. He's a fellow I'll call Colin. Colin is a resident at Higher Ground St. Paul, and he has been living there since its opening in January 2017. After high school, as an adult, Colin began work in the building and maintenance repair. He learned a lot about how large buildings operate and about the effort needed to keep things running smoothly. He landed a job at an upscale condominium complex down by the river on West 7th Street. Since this job required him to be on site most of the time, his contract ensured he was rented a condo at a reduced rate in exchange for his caretaking duties. He loved this job, he loved the tenants, and he continued employment there for the next 25 to 30 years. Over that time, his parents grew elderly and passed away, and he was awarded guardianship of his younger brother, which was his only sibling and only family member, who had a substantial developmental disability and was living in Duluth in a group home. Over time, his diabetes complicated significantly, and he unfortunately had both of his legs amputated. Due to this, he could no longer fulfill his job duties, which in turn resulted in the loss of not only his job and income, but his apartment. He found himself at 55 years old at the doorstep of Dorothy Day. He slept on the floor of the old Dorothy Day Center for a number of years while he watched the building of Higher Ground. Upon its completion, he moved into a unit subsidized by housing support, housing at the time, and began working with the case management services to get his RSDI income into place. Being a double amputee, it was awarded rather quickly after the complicated application process. Colin and his case manager immediately began looking for a market rate rental unit within Higher Ground that he could transfer into, as he would now be required to pay all of his income but the personal needs allowance, which was $102, I think, for rent. By this time, he was also required to be on dialysis 3 times per week and had all transportation to and from each appointment to pay for, all of his medications, various costs for his brother's care, and transportation to and from Duluth each month to cover. $102 would not allow him to do that. It was about 6 months or so before availability opened and allowed his transfer. The cost of his housing obligation during that 6 month period was astronomical, and effectively removed any chance of him utilizing this new income and any back payment to get ahead. He stated many, many times to me that he felt stuck.
Ms. Lowe, sorry, we just, if we could wrap up in the next minute or so.
Yep, I got like two paragraphs left. The change that we are proposing today is beyond huge. We know that 30% is a good amount to pay towards rent. It doesn't leave you rent burdened. If Colin had been allowed to pay 30% rent upon his award, he wouldn't have needed to change programs and could have better utilized that time with his case manager to set goals, create a budget, and use his own resources to move into independence. changing housing support policies to allow SSI, RSDI, veteran benefit recipients to keep more of their income would be an absolute game changer for my team and the individuals we support. It would help remove what is currently the biggest barrier I see to improving homelessness and housing outcomes, and that is something I think we can all get behind. Thank you for your support on this bill, and thank you for allowing me to speak.
Thank you so much for your testimony, Ms. Lowe. Finally on this bill, welcome back to the committee, Commissioner Angela Conley. Thank you so much for being with us. If you could just introduce yourself and go ahead with your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. Happy to be back. My name is Angela Conley, and I am a Hennepin County Commissioner. On the board, I am the chair of our Health and Human Services Committee. So I want to thank you for the opportunity to testify before you again this session about the importance of reducing and preventing people from becoming homeless. We've heard talk about prevention of homelessness in the first place, and I think what House File 3568 is going to do is just that. So today I'm here to testify in support of House File 3568, the housing support formerly known as Group Residential Housing Program that pays for room and board for seniors and adults with disabilities who have low incomes. And currently there are over 20,000 monthly recipients of housing support across the state in various types of housing that includes adult foster care, board and lodges, boarding care homes, or even like community-based housing support. Just some brief highlights. The fiscal year 2021 estimated state expenditure was around $181 million paid from the general fund. And in Hennepin County, the fiscal year 2020 payments were about $77.7 million. And we were able to serve about 10,341 people. In terms of the program structure, while the housing support program is an incredible resource for communities and helps house many people who are formerly homeless, it also leaves people with disabilities who are receiving Social Security income or SSI paying almost 90% of their income towards housing, as you've heard. And as a result, this is trapping people in poverty while leading others to choose to continue to be homeless or to return to homelessness as a result. Specifically, many people with disabilities who are eligible for housing support are even turning down the housing opportunities offered to them. Folks are choosing shelter or even encampment options over housing support programs because of the financial disincentives involved. This is especially true for our veterans who have higher levels of benefits and who are experiencing homelessness and SSI recipients as they have the largest financial disincentives. So in terms of reform efforts, we really call on the state to reform housing support in partnership with counties. By simplifying housing support and addressing the financial disincentives, we can increase utilization and reduce homelessness in many of our communities. Increasing the program effectiveness and helping address the challenges identified will do a few things: reduce homelessness, particularly among people with disabilities, lift people with disabilities out of extreme cost burden and poverty, and increase utilization of vital housing resources. And so I'm going to wrap up quickly here. Making changes in the ways listed above, and as you've heard, will result in simplification and lift additional persons with disabilities out of homelessness and into a setting where they pay 30% of their income towards their housing. This truly is prevention. So I just want to say thank you for the opportunity to speak in support of this really critical program and to ensure, as you've heard our Ramsey County partners say, that homelessness is rare, brief, and non-recurring. Thank you for the opportunity today.
Thank you so much for joining us, Commissioner Conley. We appreciate all your work. I see that Representative New Brindley has a question, but we're going to just go quick to one public testifier and then come back to you, if that's okay. Sue Watlow Phillips, welcome to the committee. If you could introduce yourself and proceed with your testimony. We really only have a couple minutes because we got to get to questions and a vote. But
Thank you, Chair Gomez and committee members. I'm Sue Watlow Phillips, Executive Director of MICA and President of the National Coalition for the Homeless. We strongly support these changes to the housing support program. People experiencing homelessness folks from Freedom from the Streets, No More Streets, Janelle Freeman Anderson, and other folks have been talking about this for a long period of time and the importance of us making sure that people are not paying any more than 30% of their income for housing. We do know folks that are continuing to live in encampments and in shelters because they are not willing to use all of their resources to get into the housing support program. And we know that they will utilize this program if this change is made. I encourage, as this bill moves forward, is that it includes all the housing support settings and that it includes all people at whatever income that they have, that they would not pay more than 30% of their income for housing. We are in a housing a homeless cliff right now, as was talked about earlier in the committee, and we have potentially thousands of folks that are at risk of becoming homeless. This is a great program to get people into housing right away, and by making this change, that will make it much more available and user-friendly for folks that are eligible for it. So thank you for the opportunity to testify.
Thank you very much for your testimony, Ms. Watla-Phillips. Lead New Brinley, questions for the author or testifiers.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I wonder if my question, and thank you, Representative Kerr, I wonder if my question is actually for Ms. Schmidt or Commissioner Conley. They might have, well, actually, first of all, to Representative Kerr, has a fiscal note been requested on this?
Yes, sorry.
Go ahead, yeah, Representative Kerr.
Chair Gomez, New Brinley, yes, it has been requested. We have not received anything back because of the changes that we made recently, which narrowed the scope, so we did not get it back yet.
Representative New Brinley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Then I wonder if Ms. Schmidt or Commissioner Conley could comment really quickly. I know that we don't have much time, but I would be interested to know, I mean, theoretically, there would be an increased cost to the state in the subsidy, right, if more of that income is being retained. But I wonder if there would also be a potential decrease in cost for emergency shelter and care. And I'm wondering if we, obviously we don't have the fiscal note yet. I would love to see this with the fiscal note, but I'm wondering if we think there are potential savings here, if it will be sort of a sum zero game. I certainly understand removing the psychological barriers to make sure that we can keep people stably housed.
Commissioner Conley or Ms. Schmidt, did either of you want to comment on the question? Commissioner Conley?
Madam Chair, if I may, thank you for the question, Representative New Brinley. I would say it's a combination of both. We have people that are outside living in places that are unfit for human habitation because of the fear of losing the majority of their income from being in emergency shelter. So we're seeing that there is a switch where people are choosing to either remain homeless, go back to homelessness if housing supports are available because of the way that the funding formula is set up currently. So there could be more of a savings. In fact, we could even see more people move into permanent supportive housing if they didn't have to risk 90% of their income and the inability to actually live off of the personal allowance. So I could see a mixture of both. But again, as you said, it's difficult to tell without the fiscal note. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Commissioner Conley. Ms. Schmidt, did you have anything to add, or?
In the interest of time, I think Commissioner Conley said it well. Thank you.
Great. Representative New Brinley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I know that we don't have a fiscal note. Ideally, when the fiscal note comes in, this would be relatively neutral, which I think is positive. And there's a potential really good positive impact from this. I will support this to move on to the next committee, but I'll be interested to see how that plays out in the future.
Great, and we'll just make sure that you get that info and when we get it from the budget office.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
And so we're gonna move on to a vote. I did just wanna add, you know, that what people have talked about really aligns with my experience. It was something that I was surprised about, like being around folks who are in unsheltered homelessness, was how many people were not going into shelter because of this issue. So there were people at Powderhorn, they worked every day and were sleeping in a tent because they were trying to, you know, save for a down payment, kind of like you can't like save up for a future opportunity if you're, you know, paying all the cash that you do have out to a shelter. So really appreciative of Representative Herr for bringing this forward. Did you have any final comment you wanted to add?
Just that I hope for everybody's support. It is a bipartisan bill, and thank you all for hearing it.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Representative Herr. Hearing no further discussion, I'm going to renew my motion that House File 3568, as amended, be re-referred to Human Services, Finance, and Policy. Clerk can take the roll. The chair votes aye.
Chair Gomez, aye. Vice Chair Keeler?
Aye.
Vice Chair Keeler, aye. Lee New Brindley?
Aye.
Lee New Brindley, aye. Davids?
Davids, aye.
Davids, aye. Heinrich?
Heinrich, aye.
Heinrich, aye. Hollins?
Hollins, aye.
Hollins, aye. Hornstein?
Hornstein, aye.
Hornstein, aye. Howard?
Howard, aye.
Howard, aye. Cagle?
Cagle, aye.
Cagle, aye. Petersburg?
Petersburg, aye.
Petersburg, aye. Ryer?
Ryer, aye.
Ryer, aye. We have 11 ayes.
There being 11 ayes and 0 nays, the motion passes and House File 3568, as amended, is re-referred to Human Services, Finance, and Policy. Members, our next meeting is Wednesday, March 16th, and with that, we are adjourned. Thank you so much for your work.